If you enjoy listening to Mark Shea and all of his wonderful co-hosts here on Connecting the Dots, then consider becoming a friend of the show and provide your support today. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show. Thank you.
Hello, and welcome to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today on this fine Wednesday afternoon in October. October is one of my favorite months. I love October a great deal. I've actually written poems about October. That's how much I love October. And we're here today. It's Wednesday. And normally on Wednesday, my co-host is Mr. Rod Bennett. However, Rod is off doing bigger and better things than being on Connecting the Dots today. He has gone off to Birmingham, Alabama, and he's going to be on EWTN Live this evening, going to get interviewed by Father Mitch Pacwa. And so he's on the road today doing that famous thing. And if you watch EWTN Live, it's on tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. You can also stream it. And you can watch Rod live. Those who listen to the show know that Rod is just an endless font of fun raconteur interest in everything. He is just, he's interested in the whole wide world, and it comes burbling out through him, and he's just always just such a joy to talk to. So it'll be a real pleasure watching the show tonight. If you get a chance to do it, watch EWTN Live, and you get to see my co-host Rod Bennett. But because Rod is not here, I decided it would be a great idea to have a special guest. He is a fellow Pathiosi. He writes for Pathios, and his name is Matthew Tyson. Matthew is a Catholic convert like me. He's a political writer, a marketing strategist. He's from Alabama, just where Rod is headed off to today. Where do you live in Alabama, Matthew?
I live in Anniston. It's actually about 45 minutes to an hour away from Birmingham.
Oh, okay.
So we're there a lot. We travel back and forth to Birmingham a lot. So
okay. And Matthew's married, got a wife, two kids, soon to be three kids.
Yeah.
And you write the Mackerel Snapper blog at Pathios, where you discuss social issues. From a left perspective, though through a Catholic lens.
Right.
And he's also a fellow with Democrats for Life of America. So welcome to the show, Matthew.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Happy to have you on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it'd be interesting. It's funny. I have not budged, as far as I can tell, I haven't budged an inch in my political views since I became a Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
As near as I can tell, I believe, as I've always believed, that my politics comes second to the faith. So I've always embraced a consistent pro-life ethic, and have always thought that, you know, that's where you begin your politics, that, you know, the law was made for man, not man for the law, and so on and so forth. you know, I believe all the Holy Catholic Church believes, teaches, and proclaims is revealed by God. And yet, you know, over the last couple of years, and particularly, you know, this election cycle,
mm-hmm.
I have had people, you know, tell me that I am a quote unquote libtard. Always
Same
such here. A classy term, that.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know? It's like, well, how can that? I mean, I oppose abortion. I believe there is no such thing as gay marriage. Not that there is not a right to gay marriage, but rather that it doesn't exist. There isn't such a thing. That's not what marriage is. If this makes me I don't know what kind of liberal that makes me.
I think it's probably your, I think it's more, you know, what I know, it's more the social justice stuff that gets people thinking that way. I mean, you know, if you oppose, you know, anything, even if you're doing it from a Catholic perspective, if you oppose anything that doesn't line up with, you know, right-wing ideology, you know, you're either, you're either for us 100% or you're completely against us. One of the two, there's no in between for a lot of those people. So I think that's where it comes from, you know?
Yeah, I think that that's true. Well, the irony, of course, is it always reminds me of Reagan's remark, because Reagan started out as a Democrat. And he said, they moved. I just stayed where I was.
Right? Yeah.
And that's kind of it, you know, is I'm watching as the Republican Party becomes the home of the alt-right, which is an openly and nakedly racist and often eugenicist movement. And I look at this in horror and I can't believe what I'm watching. But I haven't budged. I mean, this is just, it's always been the teaching of the church.
Well, I'll tell you,
racism is a sin.
Right.
Eugenics is evil. I mean, Chesterton wrote an entire book called Eugenics and Other Evils.
I know you have a lot of people who I think this stuff has always been kind of latent, in them. And I think that, I don't know, the past few years, especially throughout the Obama administration, there's been more and more people kind of coming out a little bit here, a little bit there, saying, no, it's okay. You can feel this way and say these things and still be Catholic or Christian or whatever. And then they're like, well, you know, here's some ways you can relate that thing. And I think it's just been sort of a slow revelation, I guess, if you will, about, you know, how these kind of latent racist tendencies a lot of people actually still have. And now with the Trump campaign and the alt-right and all this kind of stuff, I mean, you've got these people who are basically telling them, you know, hey, you can come out and be yourself. And, you know, it's like a big coming out party for racists. All of a sudden it's
been a very weird. Strange. Yeah. And it's really been weird because it's like, I watched a video the other day of somebody who it's always some pastor of some weird little church somewhere.
Sure,
right.
Sure.
And so I think the guy was in Indiana. I forget, but anyway, he's some pastor and he put up and I think he's like running for office or something. Anyway, he put up a thing on his Facebook page, you know, and it was some, you know, some picture of Obama, right. Both Michelle and, Barack Obama.
Which
he called them gorillas.
Yeah.
Right? And it was just, I mean, just one, like, just gross, disgusting, photoshopped thing after another, putting chimp faces on them and all the rest of it. It was just repulsive. And then, you know, they do this interview with him and he says, oh, I'm not a racist or anything.
Sure. Well, I mean, and I think that's something you see. They're not racist. You know, they don't hate black people. They just wish that African-Americans acted like white people. If they would just do that, you know, there wouldn't be any issues or, you know, it's or we're just, you know,
what
we're
does
just
that kidding. Even we're mean, just, though?
I don't know.
So anyway, I mentioned all this because there really has been. I mean, it has. You know, the effect of the Trump campaign has been to free a lot of people's inner racists. You know, and they always say things like, oh, he's not politically correct. Well, what does that mean? Well, what it means is that he makes racist remarks. He retweets crap from, you know, white identity websites. He retweets crap from, you know, neo-Nazi websites and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. And as the pro-life movement has insanely decided to join itself at the hip to this guy for the most part, you know, deny it however you like, of course, people of color are getting the message loud and clear. And so, Trump's got like 0% of the black vote because they're not stupid. They can see.
Right.
So I was on my Facebook page today, and I have a number of I've got, you know, 5,000 readers on my Facebook page.
Right.
And, you know, so a certain percentage of them, don't ask me. When you have 5,000 readers on your Facebook page, you don't have a clue what the demographics are. It's just a lot of people reading it, right? And so, but I have a couple of friends through Facebook. They're both women. Both longtime serious pro-life Christians. One of them is a Catholic. One of them is Episcopalian. They're both women of color.
Mm-hmm.
And they wrote today, and one of them said, I am so
tired, because one of the tropes that you hear, and I've heard this repeatedly, is, well, which is worse, abortion or racism? I've had people say in an accusatory tone, you think racism is worse than abortion. Oh. Like that's bad, right?
Right.
And it's like, can't they both be bad?
You know? Right. It's just a snaky way to...
Do we have to... Yeah, I mean, is... Okay, really? Do we have to rank them? I think they're both evil. And, you know, any look at the 20th century, for example, the years, oh, say, 1939 to 1945, you might note that racism can really actually lead to all kinds of murder as well.
Sure.
It's just... Call me crazy, but there is a connection, you know.
Well, you know, abortion is evil. There's no question about that. And it is a very evil thing. And I think that, you know, people tend to look at it and go, well, as long as I oppose the most evil thing, I can let these other lesser evil things, or things that I've deemed to be lesser evil things, I can let those slide by. Because as long as I'm fighting the good fight against abortion, you know, I'm, you know, I can.
Exactly.
I don't have to worry about these other things. I can be the anti-hero or whatever. I don't know.
Well, we will continue this conversation when we return. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here today with Matthew Tyson of the Mackerel Snapper blog on Pathos. And we'll be back on Breadbox Media right after this.
If you enjoy listening to Mark Shea and all of his wonderful co-hosts here on Connecting the Dots, then consider becoming a friend of the show and provide your support today. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show. Thank you. You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Mr. Matthew Tyson, billionaire heir to the Tyson Chicken fortune. actually, but he is a writer for Pathos. He writes the Mackerel Snapper blog. I just want to read something here because I think it really kind of leads into a lot of what we want to discuss today. So I have among my gazillion readers over on Facebook, there's a couple of women that I'm very fond of. One of them is a longtime devout pro-life Catholic woman. The other one is a devout pro-life Episcopalian woman, both very serious, committed Christians, have been for years. Serious, committed, pro-life people have been for years. And one of the things, they were reacting finally to the endless excuse-making for Trump and his base's overt, unescapable, and undeniable constant torrent of racism that comes from these guys, and the excuses that pro-life Christians keep making for them. Not all pro-life Christians, of course. There is a what I call the Trumpkinized pro-life movement, whose mission basically is no longer defending the unborn. It's defending Donald Trump from whatever, you know, filthy thing that he says or does today. And one of the filthy excuses that they make for his racism is, well, abortion is worse. Okay, so what, right? Yes, it's worse. And what? Trump doesn't oppose abortion. He doesn't care about abortion. But you're busy telling me that racism is okay because abortion somehow. Anyway, so one of these women wrote and said, I am so tired of hearing white people say racism isn't bad, but abortion And the next reader wrote, and this is the one that broke my heart. She says, "Know what? I'm sick of it too. I obviously had more value in my mother's womb than I ever had or will have since she birthed me." And the other one then replied, "Exactly how I feel." Now, I really think it's vital for people who are serious about the pro-life movement to get it through their heads who these women are. These women are not people who are looking for some excuse to diss the pro-life movement because they're secretly pro-abortion and they're whatever. I mean, these people are people who are long-time committed pro-life Christians, and they've gotten the message loud and clear from the Trumpkinized pro-life movement that they don't matter. They're not important. And in fact, you know, knock yourself out, be as racist as you like, because as long as you say something about the unborn, as long as Trump doesn't even care about the unborn, but as long as he pretends to for five seconds, then everything else is fine. You know, the opposition to abortion taketh away the sins of the right. And if these women, who are as devout Christian and hardcore pro-life as they come, if these women have gotten that message loud and clear, what on earth do Christians who hope to bear witness to the gospel, what message do you think that people outside the church, outside the pro-life movement, have gotten from the pro-life movement? And this is why... this is why I've been screaming from the rooftops about the folly of the pro-life movement hitching itself to this guy. They have tattooed Donald Trump all over their face for the next generation. Every time any person of color looks at the pro-life movement that supports Donald Trump, they're gonna hear what these women have heard. That's the message that we have managed to send. So, you know, this is why I'm appalled. And I keep saying it would be better, frankly, to suffer persecution from a candidate who opposes the pro-life movement than it would be to sell our souls to this guy. And you know, gain the whole world and lose our souls. So anyway, I wanted to relay that really tragic conversation because this is why I think a pro-life left really has something to say to us. So talk a little bit about you know, your background and how you came to the faith and how you approach the faith, why you approach the faith the way you do.
Well, I was raised, you know, I'm from Alabama. I still live in Alabama. I love Alabama, you know, and so, but, you know, it's, you know, we actually do kind of have a pretty sizable Catholic culture here. But, you know, it pales in comparison to the size of the Baptists and the fundamentalists and everything. And so I was raised in that tradition, very Baptist, fundamentalist, dispensationalist, premillennialist, you know, I don't know. It all kind of gets into a mixed bag down here a lot of times. But I was raised in that. I've always been a really inquisitive person. Got to be, you know, teenager, 16, 17 years old, had a lot of questions, went to the pastor with the questions. Pastor essentially said, "Pray more, read your Bible." And I said, "That's what I've been doing. It's not working." And ultimately decided around the right before I went to college, like, you know what, forget it. It shouldn't be this hard. So if it's going to be this hard, then just forget it. And what's funny is I never actually could relinquish belief in God. Like that's one reason I'm not an atheist. I've actually like spent a lot of time trying to disprove God to myself because I don't like loose ends, but I could never relinquish like the idea of a God. So I just was like, I'm just going to be a deist and call it that and be done with it. And I did for years. And then, you know, I got married to a Catholic and started learning about the faith and, you know, just sort of brought in, you know, just sort of new perspective of everything that I thought I knew and started looking into it. And just sort of one thing led to another from there. And I ended up getting sucked in, by the Roman Catholic Church, which is fantastic. But what's funny, you know, you talk about pro-life left and stuff like that. What's funny is I was also raised in a very conservative Republican household. And when I started questioning everything I was raised from a religious perspective, I also started questioning everything that I was raised from a political perspective. And I actually became like moved to the left as I became Catholic, weirdly enough. I'm not the only person to ever claim that. And I've always been a very political person. So I do identify on the spectrum and I do identify with politics. And I do think the Catholics need a place in politics, not on the political spectrum. One of the things I like to say is that I am the distinction I try to make is that I'm a Catholic Democrat or I'm a Catholic. I don't like to use the term liberal, but essentially a Catholic liberal, Catholic leftist, not a leftist Catholic or a liberal Catholic or a democratic Catholic. And I think the order of the words is actually very important because like you said earlier, like, you know, I am a joke, but this is true. I lean about as far left as the church will let me. when it comes to political matters. And so, and that ends up when you really start to get down to the core of it, that ends up being pretty daggum left. I mean, like outside of like abortion and I mean, even with same-sex marriage, like I'm pretty open about the fact that I can't, you know, I agree with the church and it's not really so much a personally opposed, but publicly for kind of thing. But it's like I don't know, we live in a secular society that's not dictated by the church and they have a different idea and understanding about these things. And true, I don't know, I feel really conflicted about telling, you know, two men that they can't enjoy the same tax benefits as me. In a secular society. So, I mean, I don't really fight the issue. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just kind of, it's kind of where I moved into. And then of course I discovered, you know, Democrats for Life and, one of the things you were talking earlier about the, you know, the pro-life movement attaching itself to Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. and how it's doing so much damage. And, you know, this is kind of, I think a really important thing. Like you said, something that the pro-life left or left-leaning pro-life people have to say, I kind of feel like the right and the people that are the pro-life movement itself has gotten so obsessed with the goal of eliminating abortion, and they've gotten so caught up in the debate. You know, and I think one of the biggest mistakes that's also been made is that we spend more time debating with people who support abortion and not enough time focusing on the people who are actually having abortions. Mm-hmm. You know, so like they've gotten so caught up in this debate fighting against people like Cecil Richards and the Democrats and Hillary Clinton and this idea of this pro-life feminazi type person who wants to murder all our babies or whatever. I don't know. They've gotten so caught up in the culture war aspect of it that I think they've – and so caught up in the end goal that I think they've actually lost sight of the, the way that we can approach it. And they've turned it into this almost like scorched earth policy. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right. I think towards the end, we are going to find ourselves, we are going to lose a lot of credibility. I think we are going to lose a lot of, support. And I think that people are going to start tying the pro-life movement to more to the right and more to racist rhetoric, especially if, and hopefully when Donald Trump loses the election in November, because then it's all going to have been for nothing. And then, you know?
Yeah. Well, actually what I think will happen, on the ground, we'll talk what I talk about.
Sure. Sure.
when we get back, we're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. And we are here today with Matthew Tyson of the Mackerel Snapper blog on Pathos. And we'll be back here on Breadbox Media right after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Thank you. Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Matthew Tyson. By the way, if you want to join the conversation, give us a call. We're at 1-573-4-BREAD-4, 1-573-4-BREAD-4. And you were talking before the break about you know, what'll happen when Trump loses, which please God he will. I would love to say that I think that his supporters will have a moment of circumspection in which they ask themselves what they did wrong. I don't believe that for a second.
No.
I think that what will happen is Trump will, first of all, declare that he is the victim of a giant conspiracy. And he'll drag that out for months, and all of his supporters will believe that. And so we'll spend a lot of time hearing about the contested legitimacy of the election of Hillary Clinton. And at the same time, we will also hear every person that said Trump must lose. Once Hillary is in office, she is going to do evil things.
Of course.
That's, you know, that's just that it goes without. And so that's what, do you remember anything about Walter Mondale? me neither. That's going to be kind of it. You know, nobody's going to remember all the crazy stuff that Trump said. And has done. And instead, what the reality will be, Hillary is now president, and here is some awful thing that she's doing, and it's all your fault. You made this happen. So that's where it will go. And so there will be no self-examination that I think will happen from a Trump supporter. There'll certainly be no self-examination from Trump himself. He is literally congenitally unable to ever admit error.
Oh, sure.
Ever, right?
Yeah, I really thought that maybe the GOP was going to do a little bit of reflection after Romney lost in 2012, because they put so much effort into defeating Obama. They spent so much money trying to stop him, and they failed at that. And I thought, I don't know, maybe now they'll think like, okay, so this isn't working. And good Lord, no, they did the opposite of that. They went the... Yeah. Yeah. Complete opposite direction.
Yeah, and so that's how that will go.
Yeah.
So there will be no moment of, you know, reconsideration or where did we go wrong or any of that. But my approach, as I've said many times, I don't want Hillary to win. I just want Trump to lose.
Sure.
But unfortunately, in the real world, that means that Hillary must win. Mm-hmm. That's the great misfortune of all of this. She'll be starting with very little political capital. You know, I mean, the only people who detest her more than conservatives are left wingers.
Depends on who you're talking to.
I mean
they do, but I think that a lot of left wingers have some faith in the platform and the fact that Bernie Sanders was able to get so much done and raise so much hell about everything that happened. I mean, and you know, from the left side, there's a lot of people talking about how, you know, please understand that this wasn't our first choice. For the more left, you know, the more left than your regular more left of center Democrat. But, you know, 2018 is going to be an interesting year because, you know, there's a big push for, you know, we can't stop here. We've got to do something about the Senate and Congress, too, because if that doesn't change and the Republicans are going to come out in full force in 2018, you know, to do everything they can to keep Hillary Clinton from being able to get anything done. I don't know. It's going to be an interesting year. It's going to depend on how much she sticks to the platform. How much the Democrats and the Senate and the Congress or Senate and House are able to get done and have, you know, if they're able to get some seats back on. And there's a lot. It's going to be an interesting 4 years. That's for sure.
Yeah. So, you know, but I, you know, I'm looking at primarily from the perspective of the church and what are we trying to get done as Catholics? So my attitude has always been, you know, if they agree with the church, insofar as they agree with the church, then I will back them. So, you know, there was a lot that Sanders had to say that was actually in wholehearted agreement with church teaching. So in as much as that was the case, you know, go Bernie. And a lot of what he was trying to do was, because he knew that he was never going to get the nomination. That was not going to happen. But his whole mission was simply to try to push the Democratic Party agenda in a number of directions, and he did that. And so, you know, she winds up adopting a number of the positions that he holds. And so, you know, and as far as that is in accord with church teaching, good for her. But, you know, there's what always squares the pitch is that gigantic blind spot, the primal original sin of the left, which is its embrace of abortion. And it can't let that go. And we saw that, you know, in full play again at the debates with the vice presidents. Vice presidential candidates. It was this weird, you know, one is a Catholic, the other one is a former Catholic, and the Catholic tries to like play up his, you know, as a reader of mine, Matthew Miller remarked, you know, the two times that Trump or that Cain refers to his Catholic faith and how it's influenced his life as a politician. In both cases, it was to say, here's where I fight the church.
Right? Yeah.
And it's like, what are you doing? You know? And I mean, he's out there trumpeting the fact that he's a Catholic, you know. Pence, on the other hand, his mission was to lie to us about what Trump has said. And basically to come up with a fictitious Trump that doesn't actually exist, and lie about things that he has said. And one of the things that his mission was to lie to us that Trump is in any serious way pro-life.
Sure.
And so you've got one guy who's like talking the pro-life game while the other is saying, I just can't allow myself to do anything against sticking scissors in a baby's brain. And it's like, what are you doing? But then the other one, you know, after he's done his pro-life shtick and lied that Trump is pro-life, then gets on to what he really cares about, what he and Trump both really care about, which is looking, you know, desperate Syrian child refugees in the eye and saying, go to hell.
Right.
And a pro-life movement that can accept that, that can say, sure, I'm pro-life, and those Syrian brats can go to hell, is not a pro-life movement. It's an anti-abortion movement, and that's good enough. But, I mean, that's, you know, that's it's good as far as it goes. But you can't call yourself pro-life.
No.
You know, and look at, you know, some desperate kid trying to flee that horror going on in Aleppo and say, screw you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't do it, you know. So,
it's interesting. I don't know. The thing, you're never going to convince people that you're never going to convince them of that about the irony of that, because, you know, and as it's been put to me plenty of times, you know, as a left wing ish writer, you know, abortion is the most evil. So any of those other things that might be considered pro life are more like a la carte things. They're not as important. They don't matter. And then they'll make excuses, you know, I don't know, that, you know, we got to worry about our safety and we got to worry about our this or that. And then they'll make every number of excuses. And their trump card is the fact that there's a way to weasel out of it. And there's not a way to weasel out of support for abortion. And therefore, you know, game over, checkmate. I win. None of these things are more just like with the racism thing, you know, capital punishment. It's not as important as abortion, bringing in dying people who are being bombed to hell and back in you know, in Aleppo, doesn't matter. They might be terrorists, so better none of them than any of them. That kind of thing. And so I don't know. You're never gonna really my honest belief is that the best thing we can do is to try to cultivate a more pro-life movement within, I mean, at least for me personally, within the Democratic Party, and then focus on the younger generations and trying to build a whole life ideology among the, not just like the younger millennials, but even those younger, like my own children and people. I think that's really going to be long-term, really going to be the answer.
Right. I totally agree. The problem with the Trumpkinized pro-life movement is that it says that the core issue is abortion with its mouth. But with all of its actions, what it actually spends all of its time and energy on is defending Donald Trump and whatever culture of death thing he's on about today. So we hear that abortion is the core value that we need to be defending against. That's the core issue that we need to defend against. But then what do we actually get? Well, we get people spending all of their time talking about how therefore we need to fight the church on the death penalty. Let's get the death penalty. Let's make sure the death penalty remains safe and sacrosanct.
Right.
It's like, I thought your core issue was abortion. Why are you spending all of your time fighting the church on the death penalty? Or whatever. Well, we will we'll be right back after this. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. And we are here today with Matthew Tyson of the Mackerel Snapper blog at Patheos. And we'll be back right after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Welcome back to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Mr. Matthew Tyson of the Mackerel Snapper blog. And by the way, I just discovered I have a reader whose handle is Connery O'Flannel, which I really like. But anyway, so, well, you're a member of Democrats for Life, which, as we all know, is really a subversive organization that exists to try to lure unwary pro-lifers away from the Republican Party, the one and only truly pro-life
party.
I was wondering if surely there's no such thing as actual pro-life Democrats, right?
No, and
they have absolutely no sense of being elected anywhere ever, right?
None, except that there are. And to be fair, you know, there used to be more. There used to be more, but there's not now. But no,
my Thursday co-host Doug O'Brien, he's also a pro-life Democrat.
Nice.
And he says, you know, time was when half the party was pro-life Democrats. Now it's down to about a third. They're being hunted to extinction like buffalo.
Yeah.
But
well, it's happening. But I think I hold out hope that there's going to be a little bit of a resurgence for a couple different reasons. I mean, really, on one, I know I wrote about this, wrote a blog about this on Mackerel Snapper. But Tim Kaine really does give me a little bit of hope for helping get the Democrats for Life a seat at the table, because even though he did break on his pro-life, because he used to be fully pro-life. We endorsed him back before he ran for Senate. And then, you know, I guess he wanted that, you know, that Democratic, you know, DNC money and broke, which is unfortunate. But I really do think that at the bottom of his heart, he's uncomfortable with his party stance. I really, truly do believe that. I think he does it because he doesn't want to lose his job, which is still an act of cowardice. But, you know, I can empathize with it, but that doesn't make it right. But I think that, you know, we know him, Kristen at Democrats for Life. She knows him. I think that he's going to be, I think that he would be a good way for us to at least get some conversation started. But I mean, the only person right now who is keeping the South from being completely red is a man named John Bel Edwards, who is the Democratic governor of Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And he was elected last year in a very deeply red state as governor. And his pro-life ideology went a long way to helping that. And we're not talking about like people who are personally pro-life, you know, but publicly, pro-choice, whatever. These are people who are fully and completely personally and publicly pro-life. Mm-hmm. Louisiana has somebody right now, who, a woman named Carolyn, who is running for Congress. She's a pro-life Democrat. Okay. She's like the top bill Democrat right now. I mean, they're popping up. You know, the DFL is getting more movement. But I'll tell you what frustrates me so much is that you have a lot of people out there who essentially agree with everything that everything except abortion the Democratic Party talks about, the social justice, the approach to government, all that stuff, but they refuse to get involved because of the party's stance on abortion. And it's like, do you realize that if all of us got together, stop talking about third parties and stop talking about all this other stuff, and really legitimately tried to push a real solid pro-life movement in the Democratic Party, that it would actually get done, especially since no one talks about this, but especially since like the Democrats are actually losing badly across the country, especially in red states. I mean, the Republicans have more state houses. They have more, I mean, state congresses. They have more governorships. They have the majority in Congress right now. If the Democrats would at least open up to more pro-life candidates, they would win back all these states they lost.
I've said it for years that if the Democratic Party gave up its fixation on abortion, they would never lose another election.
And we're not even necessarily asking them to not be the pro-choice party. Like, there's a part of me that realizes that's never going to go away. All we're really asking for is that you open up ideologically and just accept the fact that you've got some people who are pro-life. You don't have to change your platform, you know, right now, at least. You don't have to do that. You don't have to renege on absolutely everything. You know, you don't have to – you could just open up to the fact that, yes, we
80% of Americans don't want them to. That's the thing that I keep pointing out. To, you know, I would love it. If Roe v. Wade went away tomorrow, I would be so happy. But you know what? It's not going to. And the reason it's not going to is not because there's an evil cabal of Democrats keeping it from happening. It's because there's 80% of the American people like Roe v. Wade and they don't want it to go away. They also don't like abortion and they don't want to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, how can people have that kind of a split brain? Easy as pie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They had exactly the same split brain about slavery 150 years ago. They didn't like it, and they didn't want to do anything about it. And, you know, that's the way people are. And so you've got really, you know, it's not some cabal of Democrats who are keeping it from happening. It is a joint cooperative venture by both Democrats and Republicans working in tandem with 80% of the American people.
Absolutely.
To make sure that our abortion regime remains exactly the way it is right now.
Absolutely.
Everybody benefits. The Republican Party, it would be a catastrophe for the Republican Party if Roe v. Wade ever went away. Because all of a sudden, they don't have that carrot anymore to drag pro-lifers to vote for somebody like Donald Trump.
State level Republicans would have some help, because then that's always been my thing, is like, even if we do get rid of Roe v. Wade, you could consider that a pro-life victory, but it's not. I don't feel like it's a real victory, because it doesn't get rid of abortion. It doesn't suddenly outlaw it. It just sends it back to the states. Right. Not only will at least half, not if not more, depending on how future elections go, are going to keep abortion legal. But suddenly the business becomes even more lucrative, because I'm in Alabama, you know, I'm a woman who gets pregnant and who feels like she needs to get an abortion. And the only state around here who's got it is Georgia. Well, suddenly Georgia's got a really solid corner on a market. You know what I mean? Like, sure. It's like a I don't know. It's like a battle, but it's not the war. And I feel like everyone thinks that Roe v. Wade is the war, and that's not the case.
Right.
You know.
And so it comes back to, you know, the pro-life movement has thought entirely in terms of supply. That's right. Been the only way they've addressed the issue of abortion is we have to eliminate supply. And you can't eliminate supply because we have this thing called Roe v. Wade that says right. limitless supply. It's totally legal. And so we've fought the entire struggle simply looking at supply while at the same time backing a party whose policies tend to increase demand.
Exactly.
Because they, exactly. the biggest abortifacient in the United States is not RU486, it's poverty.
Right.
And Republican policies have resulted repeatedly, particularly, for example, in 2007 and 2008, in huge upticks in poverty. And when you don't have a lot of money, one of the things that you start thinking is, I can't afford another kid.
Mm-hmm. And people tend to think that they can't put themselves in the mindset. And I think one of the biggest issues that the pro-life movement has as well is that they put a lot of lip service to having mercy for post-abortive women, but they don't do so in action. Right. And when you're looking at the potential of losing your job, of not having enough room in your car, not having enough money to support this child, not having access to health care, not having access to child care, fearing, you're going to have a lack of support, all these things that run into it from a objective perspective, you could say, yeah, well, life is more important though. And that's true, but you can't judge it by just that alone, because you'll find that those things are really, really, really coercive and will completely change the way that you view life. And they will drive people into, and that's why I don't even like the word pro-choice, because for a lot of women, it's not a choice. You know, right. It's not a pro-choice issue. It's a desperation issue. And sure. So you address those things first, address that issue. I've said before, let's make the world a truly pro-choice world. Let's make it to where the only reason that anyone might want to have an abortion is because they just don't want a baby right now. If we could get to there, we could, this is a whole new conversation. That's what gets to more like the philosophical aspects of life. That's a whole new conversation. We're not there yet though. We've got people having abortions because they feel like they can't even afford a child. And that's a huge injustice in my opinion. And that's what the pro-life left and the pro-life Democrats want to address. That's why we get so much crap, because we're not so focused on trying to outlaw it. We're trying to worry about the demand aspect first. And, that's not good enough for some people.
Well, and it's ironic, of course, because when we get away from abortion, pro-life people typically get back to something like a Catholic sort of common sense about the reality of evil in the world. So you don't run into people saying we need to outlaw war.
Right.
we need to forever forbid, poverty from happening. Poverty is a bad thing. War is a bad thing. But we recognize that, it's going to happen.
Right.
So what can we do to reduce it?
Right.
Without having some utopian dream of annihilating it.
Right.
And I think part of what has happened with the pro-life movement is we've become fixated on, frankly, a fantasy of annihilating it from the face of the earth. That's not going to happen. And in going for the perfect, we're giving up on the good.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, we are, alas, out of time.
Oh, no.
But I want to thank you so much for being on the show today, Matthew.
Thank you.
Tyson.
I had a blast.
Yeah. Thanks for being here. Matthew is the author of the Mackerel Snapper blog. He will be, you can find him there at Patheos any time of the day or night, ready to answer your questions about stuff. Our producer today was Jen the Jawa Longworth. And we will be back tomorrow with Doug O'Brien here on Connecting the Dots. Till then, have a great evening. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.